TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show. This is podcast number 116, and I am Libya, your host, and we have two returning guests.
Hi, this is Ronnie from Las Vegas.
And Allison from Tarzana.
And this week in the news, actually, I just have some surprising news. For those of you who've been watching Scandal with me, and you know who you are, it seems that Ian Cusack who plays Stephen Finch on Scandal, his contract has not been renewed, which I think is strange. He's basically plays Olivia Pope's best friend, and he's a kind of major character, so it's weird. I mean, he doesn't have anything to do with the good stuff, which is the White House storyline, but in her inner core group, I thought he was one of the more interesting characters, so...
He really is, and out of all of them, like, you know, when you think about it, he would be the one that I would least suspect to let go, because he is the closest to her.
Right. Well, and maybe they did that on purpose so we wouldn't have a window into her, which is weird, though, but I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, I don't like that particularly, because he had a romance starting, and he was her best friend, and all, whatever. I'm sort of disappointed, but I mean, like
same
I said,
here.
The whole thing for me is the White House stuff, so if they'd screwed that up, I really would have been upset. The other thing is that Joshua Molina, who plays the district attorney,
mm-hmm.
he has gotten a contract to be a series regular, so he's moved up. Which is great, because I love Joshua Molina, and his character is really interesting.
So, and the relationship, the dynamic between him and Olivia is also very interesting.
It is, and so I'm cool with that. I think that's a good move. I don't understand the other move. Next thing I have is, on a similar note, another Shonda Rhimes show. Tim Daly, who is, I think, a pretty big star on Private Practice, though I've never actually seen Private Practice, but I've seen his picture in the commercials. And apparently his contract was not renewed.
Oh, wow.
So they let him go. So, you know, during the whole contract negotiations, those fell apart and he's not coming back. Which, yeah, I'm like, really? You're just letting your stars go left and right. Like, okay.
What's funny, he has this webisode with his son called The Daily Show. Maybe he just wants to do that.
I really doubt that's the case. But, yeah, for some reason...
He's just a little douche, you know?
That's all the news that... Oh, no, well, that's the news, but what I do have is that premieres coming up this week. Suits is back. Yay! Love that show! Burn Notice is back. I think I'm out. And True Blood is back. And since they have Mr. Christopher Maloney, I am in. So, So two out of three of those shows I shall be watching. Somebody was like, Burn Notice is just popcorn, just watch it. And I was like, yeah. But some of these summer shows coming back are pretty good. So I can't waste my time on popcorn.
And the only thing that's going to be interesting, I think, in Burn Notice, because I think they are going to change it up a little bit. Because now with Fiona, you know, sort of turning herself in, it's going to, you know, I read like a little synopsis and they're saying how that they're going to focus on her, getting her out. So maybe the change. So I'm going to give it a chance.
Yeah, but I think they get her out in like the first episode.
I don't think so.
You don't?
No. But I'm not sure. So, like I said, I'll give it a chance. I'll let you know.
All right, fine. Okay, so let's start talking about the shows since we took our vacation from talking about the shows last week. We have two episodes of Game of Thrones to talk about this week, which were both, I think, pretty amazing. The first first one was the big siege at King's Landing, which was fantastic.
Blackwater. Yes. Blackwater, yes.
So let's talk about that one first. What was interesting about this episode is we basically stayed in one location. So the entire episode was in one spot, which is a first.
That never happens.
Yeah, that was a first. And I think it really helped serve the story because you got to sit and live with these characters and have small moments, which you usually don't have time for on the show.
Right.
instead of saying, and somewhere else in restaurants.
Some of the best small moments, I think, were actually Cersei. Cersei just, like, ruled all the monologues. Like, and Cersei drunk, she should always be drunk. I've come to this
conclusion.
I
definitely agree, yes.
Yeah. So she has some really good conversations with Sansa.
Really, if you thought she was horrible when she was sober, really just goes through the roof when she has some wine in her. Wow.
But yeah, she was brutal. But at the same time, she did have some truth, you know? And so it's like it was interesting, the dynamic of what she was saying, where she just, like, went over the top versus where, you know, sort of there was a reality of sort of her position.
Well, that's the thing. I think sometimes the absolute worst thing you can say is the truth. That was what was so horrible about it. It was that, you know, she was confronting Sansa with things that were absolutely real. And you know, just putting it in the most nasty and unforgiving way possible.
Yeah.
And it was like mocking her with the truth, really.
Right, yeah. So she, there was no goodness to it.
Not at all.
And I didn't know who to cheer for. I have to say, during that battle, I really like Stannis because, you know.
Do you?
I do. I like Stannis. He's not charming.
Okay, he needs somebody, I guess.
I'm not saying that he's charming or anything, but he is the rightful king, you know, and his claim to the throne is stronger than anybody else's. So,
well, it's stronger than Joffrey's, yes. But as I think Varys put it, you know, with him kind of enthralled to Melisandre, he becomes a very, very dangerous person to be ruler.
That's true. That's
exactly.
True.
Yeah, that's why I'm not so for him the way I would have been before if it wasn't for her.
Mm-hmm.
That's valid, but I do like him by himself, not with her. Because when he gets with her, he does get a little crazy. But I think I like his morals as far as. He's very straightforward about what's right and what's wrong. And I liked his conversation with Davos and it's like, you're going to be my hand and all of that. But it was, but you know, it's like once that, what is it, the call, the something fire? It was some kind of fire. But yeah, once Tyrion launched that, I was like, wow.
That was pretty amazing.
That was spectacular, yeah. You know? But I think like how
it was basically green napalm.
Yeah.
You get right down to it.
Yeah.
But like you were saying, Libya, what was confusing is like you didn't know who to root for. Because for me, it's like, you know, when I think of, you know, Tyrion, I want him, you know, I don't want him to lose, but I didn't want the rest of the Lannisters to win. And so it's like, who do you cheer for? You know, sort of what side do you come down on? When it's all messed up like it was.
Well, I have a question for you guys, because I've read the book, so I knew who was going to win. Who did you guys think was going to win that battle?
Wow. I pretty much thought that, because I think they already made it clear that Tywin was on his way with his troops.
No, no, no. They said that Tywin was going up against Robb.
That's right, because I thought that he was, oh, okay, well, that's, I guess, because I misunderstood that. I thought that, so that was no surprise when he showed up for me.
No.
See what happens when you misunderstand things? But I just assumed also that it would be premature if Stannis was able to get King's Landing in his control that fast. I figured there's got to be more with the Lannisters in control for right now just you know, continue the story the way it's going. So I really didn't think that he was going to necessarily succeed. What surprised me was that he got as close as he did, because he was within a hair's breadth of taking over King's Landing.
Yeah, that was actually pretty awesome. Ronnie, what'd you think?
And actually, you know, I didn't know. I was surprised because I didn't pick it up on it the way like sort of Allison did. So I was really surprised to see, you know, sort of the Lannisters and I'm forgetting the father's name.
Tywin.
Him come in.
Tywin,
thank you. And so, you know, but I really thought because how, you know, sort of like with Tyrion, like they had the, you know, he knew like the way to get out of the city. I thought it was going to fall. So I thought Stannis was going to make ground. And so that was a complete surprise to me the way it ended.
Right. I agree. I think when I read the book, it was very clear in the book especially that Tywin was going to go fight Robb. So when he showed up, I was like, what?
Where
I was like, where'd you come from?
And then also the alliance that he had with the other Baratheon who fell.
I can't think of the...
It wasn't with Renly. It was with the House Tyrell, is what you're thinking of.
Right, but Renly, it was Renly's people after he was killed. Right,
except that most of the people most of Renly's people went with Stannis. The only house that didn't go with Stannis was the Tyrells, because, you know, the Knight of Flowers was in love with Renly, so he was like, I'm not going to team up with somebody who killed him. So right. the House Tyrell... And the thing that's actually daunting about the fact that they've made an alliance is that everyone always talks about how rich the Lannisters are. The Lannisters always pay the debt. They're the wealthiest, whatever. The second most wealthy house in the entire Seven Kingdoms is the Tyrells. So now you have a union of the two wealthiest houses in the entire Seven Kingdoms have now teamed up, and that's bad.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that was good, but I think that was what Littlefinger was trying to do, that alliance in the first place, to, of course, get his own kingdom out of it. But what's funny is Harrenhal is cursed. So every person who's held Harrenhal has not held it for longer than one generation. So wow. I don't understand why Littlefinger's all... Well, I'm skipping ahead, sorry. But I don't understand why Littlefinger's so excited. He's like, I've got Harrenhal. I was like, it's like it's cursed. Are you kidding me?
It's a hollowed out mess. I mean, there's really nothing to it.
Well, he's thinking, oh, I'm rich, so I can rebuild it or whatever. But every single person who's been given Harrenhal has either ended up taking the black, been killed. Like, no one has held that since it fell the first time. So, like, I don't understand why he's so happy. I'd have been like, can you give me another kingdom? I'll take anything else. You know?
Anything else, right?
That would have been my thing.
Before we move on to that episode, we can't leave this one without talking about Joffrey. God.
Mister, did my mom say that I had to come in? Because if she said I had to come in, then I guess I have to go. Yeah, because do you hear my mom calling me? She says I have to go in the house.
Where is her skirt? You know, like,
sorry, gotta go.
Oh,
you need to stay here to give your troops someone to cheer for. Oh, but my mom's calling.
He's such a wimp.
And this after, what does he call it? The heart eater? You know, and he has Sansa kiss it.
Yeah, because he's like, I will drench it in blood and blah, blah, blah. Whatever, man. You know.
But
did any of you actually expect him to actually do any kind of battle whatsoever?
Oh, of course not.
Definitely not.
The whole way that he was so ridiculously outclassed by Tyrion strategizing how he was going to save the city, and he's just kind of standing there staring at him gape-mouthed, like, what? We're going to do what?
Yeah. And it was just, you know. But what I thought was really surprising was the Hound turning tail. He was like, screw this. There are people on fire. He was like, I don't do fire.
He had his childhood trauma just come running right up in front of him.
Yes.
And just knocked down, before actually reaching him by an enemy of all people.
Yeah.
By Ron.
He was just like, you know what? I'm just not going to do this. Can't do it. He's like, I cannot do it. And then he cussed out Joffrey. That was awesome. But the best scene I think the Hound has had through the entire series is the scene he had with Sansa in her quarters.
Yes.
And I was just like, go with the Hound. And I understood. I understood why she didn't, because he's scary. Yeah. And every time that she's tried to be nice to him, he's turned around and scared her on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's thanked him, she's done whatever, and he's blown it off. And so when he finally shows up and's like, look, I'll get you home. And I believed him. I mean, he has a weird obsession with her, but I don't think he would ever hurt her. Mm-hmm. But she doesn't know that.
Right, from her perspective, you know, it's like, but you see, like, we see, like, time after time that he's saved and he stepped up to help her. But I guess, like, from her perspective, it's still very scary. You can't trust anybody.
Right.
You
know?
She just thinks he's doing it because, you know, he's being told to do that by the king because he's in service to the king. So she's just a possession he's protecting.
Yeah, she's not seeing that he's going against orders to save her and stuff.
Right.
And if he, even if he does, she's thinking, oh, well, he's doing it because he wants to sleep with me. And if we get out on the road, then she has no idea what he would do to her.
Also, I think, you know, she was making a calculated risk here, because from her perspective, remember, she didn't make it back to her room until it seemed just about inevitable that Stannis was going to take over King's Landing. So she was betting on Stannis taking over, and she would be safe in that circumstance.
Right.
The fact that it didn't turn out that way is kind of miraculous, and really not her fault that she made the wrong call.
Right. That's true. But now all her allies are gone, and she's really screwed. And then now we have to address Tyrion. That's the last thing we have to talk about. Which is...
Poor Tyrion.
Well, I mean, he gave an awesome speech. He was like, those are brave men. Those are brave men out there. Let's go kill them. Like, that was a great speech. That was awesome. And because it's like the moment where he realized all the leaders were gone. And he was the only one left. And he had to figure... He was like, this castle's going to fall if I don't do something. And he stepped up and he did it. And then got his face slashed in half by his sister's man. I was like... Man, come on. I mean, there's sibling rivalry and then there's stupidity.
Right.
Like, why would you try to kill the guy that's leading your army to defend your city in the middle of battle? Like, that's insane.
Because that's the right time for it.
It is not the time. Not the time.
Unless you're Cersei.
Oh, my goodness.
Then any time's good.
The only good thing that I think, because Tywin showed up, is he will cuff everybody's heads together. It's like Dad showing up, you know.
Right.
It is Dad showing up, and he's gonna slap everybody upside the head and be like, "Behave, children," you know.
Right.
And that's the only good thing of him showing up, is that he will get the stupid, crazy, dumb sibling plotting just done. He's just like, stamp on it. It's done.
He does, and like, actually, that's like the perfect segue into the next episode, because then you see sort of after all Tyrion did. His reward, you know what I mean? Where he just got put back, you know, not into his place, but you know what I mean? It's like after all he did, no respect after that.
Well, yeah. No one wants to acknowledge that he actually saved the city, because they want to give it to Tywin. Tywin is the savior of the city. Though, did you notice that instead of coming in and bowing to the king like he's supposed to, he rode his horse into the throne room?
That was awesome. I love the use of metaphor in that. The first thing that you see is the horse
crapping
in front of the camera.
Yes.
And it's a message. Everything you are about to see is horse crap.
Yeah, well, it's more...
And it was.
That also shows how Tywin sees Joffrey.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as Cersei was worried about all these other people trying to depose Joffrey, what she should be concerned about is Tywin deciding that he's useless. If Tywin decides that Joffrey is of no use to him, he will kill him. You know, like, I don't think Cersei understands the danger that her son is in with Tywin being there. Because the first time Joffrey decides that he's king and Tywin's just his grandfather and tries to smart off, I was like, oh, that's going to be bad. Because as much power as he thinks, he has no power. He is a king with no power. The only power he has is the power that his mother gives him or that Tywin gives him. And his mother's not going to go up against Tywin.
Exactly. Right, but the only thing is that with Tywin, if he does get tired of him and kills him, but where will that leave the kingdom?
Well, there's Tommen. Tommen is the younger brother who's actually a normal child and can be controlled. Mm-hmm. So that's what they said at the end of season one, what Littlefinger said. Littlefinger was like, kill Joffrey. Put Tommen on the throne, and you can control Tommen. That was his. That was what his plan was at the beginning, and because Joffrey is insane, he is literally insane, and he started this war because he's a child in a mini man's body. Like
he's a psychotic.
Yes, thank you.
And you just need. You can't make rational decisions. Like. Because Tywin's gonna want to make logical, rational decisions to end this war and to bring the Seven Kingdoms to heel. He's going to want to just, you know, get that stuff done. And I can tell you right now that Joffrey's going to be like, well, I'm the one in charge. He's going to get smacked. If he thought that his uncle Tyrion used to slap him around, I can't wait for Tywin. Cannot wait for Tywin to just be like, shut up, boy. You know? And he's never, I don't think he spent any time with his grandfather. I don't think he understands what his grandfather's like. His mom does, but I don't think he does.
No.
So that will be interesting. Speaking of Lannisters, oh my goodness, the Jaime and Brienne talk.
What was an interesting scene.
That's it? That's all you got? Come on, Ronnie, what'd you think?
Oh my gosh, you know what I mean? Like, it just shows Jaime as more and more of a lowlife, you know what I mean? Because he keeps trying to, like, get her goat, and she's not having any of it.
Well, he's trying to escape. He figures that if he gets her angry enough and she lashes out at him, he's going to, you know, get her off balance and kill her like he's killed everyone else that he manages to provoke.
Right.
And so that's his plan, you know, and from his point of view, it's a good plan. The thing is, she doesn't rise to it.
Well, and right? the other and, thing is he then sees how she fights.
Exactly.
And then he was like,
not expecting that.
Yeah. And then he sees that he's like, oh. But what was great was the look on his face. I was like, I think Jamie's in love. Like, I think he's never seen a woman that could do anything like she can do. And I am now firmly in the Jaime Brienne shipper category now. Just because it's twisted. It's totally twisted. Totally not gonna happen.
As if nothing in this show is twisted. Where right. do you get that?
Well, my thing is, Jaime said he's only been with his sister. I'm like, dude, you need to branch out a little bit, you know. I think Brienne would be good for him. I think that would be hilarious, and I think it would be awesome. It would make me laugh a lot. But that's the ship I'm on right now. And then I'm trying to think of so the second episode we start flying all over the place again. I have to say the Rob storyline was the most disappointing and the least, like, Rob, I used to cheer for Rob because I wanted the Starks to win and everything, but now I'm like, you know what? I don't care if Rob loses. The only thing I care about, actually, is if Rob loses, that means the North is screwed. Mm-hmm. But, man, he's just making bad decision after bad decision. I was like, dude, listen to your mother. Your mother knows what she's talking about. You are thinking with your other head. This is not good. So, yeah, I just...
Although his mother is the last person he's going to listen to right now because she let Jaime go.
I understand. But she still knows what she's talking... Like, from a...
Oh, she does. But that's the thing. She has now put herself, because of that decision, in a position where her son isn't going to listen to her.
I understand. I do. But, man, he is just... It's going to be... I don't think he's going to have a very good season 3. Basically is what I'm saying.
Something tells me.
Yes, because the thing is I've noticed that when a character has screwed up and is leading himself into death or whatever, they tell you ahead of time. You can see all the mistakes that they make leading to that. So I feel like this is the big one for him. Like, just, it's bad. Bad Rob. And then Winterfell burned, man. That was uncool. Like, that was a really, I was about to say Stark image. That wasn't on purpose. But just, that broke my heart, you know? Seeing Winterfell in ashes really just hurt. And Master Luwin? Come on!
I got very upset about that. At first I thought that, you know, he just hit him with a pole. And then he pulls back and, oh, there's a pointy end to that.
Yeah.
That's not good.
Yeah, I was not.
I felt very bad about that.
And the scene with them by the tree just tore your heart out, you know?
Yeah.
Oof.
They are not good with... Only thing is, Theon Greyjoy is not... That speech, I was like, this is an awful speech, like when he was giving the speech. He was like, there's only 25 of us and we'll all go down and die. Great. I was like, are you kidding me? This is awful. And then
I remember sitting there going, this really isn't much of a pep talk for these guys.
And then they clobber him upside the head as soon as he finishes, and I fell out laughing.
He didn't even finish, actually. He got to a certain point, and it was like his secondhand man said, enough.
That was hilarious. Oh, my God.
That really was a fitting, sort of end or demise for him, you know?
Well, I don't think he's dead.
He's not dead.
They turned him over. I think they turned him over to the Starks. Yeah. So, his future is not looking bright.
Not at all.
Not at all, because Robb Stark made it clear that he didn't care about anybody else. He was happy to let the rest of them go as long as he got his hands on him.
Right. So He's in for a very bad time, is all I'm going to say about that. But is that it? Oh, no, we got to go across.
No,
we forgot Daenerys and her her awesomeness.
Don't mess with the mother of dragons. Can I just say that?
I was like, guys, you're talking about how strong and powerful she is, so you put her in the room with her dragons. Are you stupid? However, I did like her dream sequence with Drago. Drago?
Yes. Yeah. Khal Drogo.
Yeah, Drogo. Thank you. I loved her dream sequence with him, and it broke my heart. And I was like, no. I was really glad to see him.
This episode actually had two real heartbreaking moments, both of which were fairly similar because they had to do with relationships. The Khal Drogo was one, and also the other one with Tyrion and Shay.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that broke my heart in a good way. That was a good...
It was like an aww.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it made me almost cry. I was like, oh. He finally found a woman that actually really loved him for him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my goodness. But I'm hoping that doesn't mean she's dead. But
that's usually a death sentence in this show.
Yeah. But I really like that. And when she had to walk away from Drogo, oh, man. And that baby was adorable. And I was just like, wow. But she had to go save her other children. And I love that moment when they have her all chained up and they think that they have control. And she's like, really? And she looks back at her dragons and her dragons are like, hello, what? What do you need us to do? Like they were all playing.
They're all standing at attention like, yeah. Mommy, what? So it's always they underestimate her because, you know, I mean, she was the one who didn't burn up in fire, so she has her own magic as well. I mean, it's not just the dragons, you know what I mean?
Right.
And the thing is that everybody continues to underestimate who she really is.
Right. And she kept telling people that. She's like, stop underestimating me. And everyone's like, all right, whatever, kid. And she's like, Dracos, and whoosh. Flames everywhere, dead wizards on the ground. Oh, and then she locked up the dude, Zaren Zandos or something. I forgot how to say his name. And locked him up in his own empty safe. That was awesome.
Very fitting.
Yes. And then she told the Dothraki, she's like, all right, let's loot this place. And they were like, yay.
Finally.
I know. So now they got a ship. They're going to get a ship. And yes. I don't know where they're going, but apparently there will be boats involved. But I was actually thinking she needed to get on a ship before those dragons got too big to be on a ship. So, okay, we have surpassed whatever time limit we normally have for episodes. We have gone past that.
But we do have to just say one last thing because everything going on the other side of the wall.
Oh, right. Yes, the last shot. Last shot was awesome. Like the guy blows the horn, and the first was like, "Oh, they were like, "Oh, John's back." And there's like second horn's like, "Oh, Wildlings, we better get ready to fight." And then the third one goes, and they're all like, "Run for your lives!" So, watching them freak out and run, and John is now a spy within the Wildlings.
Yes.
But the main thing, of course, I figure people will either love or hate. That last shot with the freaking zombie army. Yeah, I was like, zombie army, zombie apocalypse is now here.
I was amazed at the numbers. You know what I mean? I expected to see some, but not in that multitude.
Right.
Well, you know, they've been kind of laying low for like 1,000 years, so they've been building up bodies for quite some time.
Yeah, that's not going to be good. Because the thing is, what you have is the Wildlings are running from the White Walkers, so that's why they're not trying to get across the wall to conquer. They're trying to get across the wall to survive. Mm-hmm. So a man trying to survive is going to be a completely different entity than a man trying to conquer. So the Wildlings are running for the wall to get away, mm-hmm. followed closely on their heels by the zombie apocalypse, apparently. So that will be interesting. But it's not like they're mindless zombies. They're being commanded by White Walkers, so that's not good.
Yeah.
You know, so,
zombies with a purpose.
Yes, that's very bad. All right, wrapping that up, it was a great, great finale. I thought that was fantastic. I am ready for season 3 now. Actually, what I'm probably going to do is just go read book 3 is what I'm going to go do. But yeah, thumbs up.
Definitely.
Okay, so now next up we're going to talk about Mad Men, and when I say we, I mean only Allison.
Me.
But Allison, what I want to tell you is you do not have a half an hour to discuss it like we just did for Game of Thrones. So how about this? The last two episodes that have aired, why don't you tell me, you said that big things happened.
Well, let's start
with the first one. Hit me with it.
Okay, well, the first episode, we're going back 2 weeks now, called Company Woman, is where they finally manage to land the Jaguar account, but do so in absolutely the skeeviest, nastiest, most bad taste in your mouth way that they possibly can. The thing opens up really with a scene with Pete and Ken kind of wooing one of the Jaguar guys over dinner. And the Jaguar guy makes very clear that his vote is going to hinge on whether he can manage to sleep with Joan or not.
Joan?
Because he's gotten enamored of Joan.
I like Joan. Joan's the only character I like in that office.
Yeah, well, he liked her too, in a very special and very nasty way. And you've got to understand that this guy sort of looks like the human version of Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah.
Insisting that he has a night with her. And leave it to Pete, who is a complete weasel, to decide that this is a perfectly okay idea. And he decides to broach it to Joan, who is horrified and knocks it down completely. But when he then takes this and goes to a meeting of the partners, he phrases it as, oh no, Joan's all in. She thinks it's a great idea. And they're horrified. They think it's terrible. But they kind of hem and haw because they really want the Jaguar account. So they kind of say, well, tell her she can always say no, but if she insists on doing it, taking one for the team, that's okay. The only one who is absolutely against it is Don. And he says, no, absolutely no way. I'm not going to be involved in this. And he leaves the room. And that's where everybody else just says, okay, well, if she wants to. And at that point, Lane comes to Joan and says, at least don't do what I did, which is just do what people tell you to do. Because they were going to give her like 50 grand to sleep with this guy.
Oh my God, that makes her a prostitute.
Exactly. But, you know, she needs to get something out of it because she was just recently, in the previous episode, served with papers by her husband to get a divorce. And so she's going to be raising this kid all by herself. And so and she doesn't know how she's going to do it. So Lane tells her, don't just settle for this money, ask for a partnership and a percentage of the firm.
Oh.
Now, this is partly self-serving on Lane's part because...
Well, wait, let's not, we're getting too much into detail. We need to...
Well, but, you know, he's trying to cover his embezzlement. That's why he doesn't want to give her the 50 grand. But this is actually kind of a good idea. If the company doesn't go under, she gets to be a partner. So she decides she actually will go through with it for the sake of a partnership and a stake in the firm. And there's a whole thing of Don coming her to try to talk her out of it.
Wait. I was gonna ask you before you, because right now you basically are recapping the episode. But what I really want to know is what you thought of overall the episode. As far as
I thought, overall the episode was brilliant. And the thing is, it had so much of the reason I'm going through is because there was so much going on. There wasn't just that with Joan, but also Peggy, who feels like she's still being slighted and abused, and she was left deliberately off the Jaguar account because they're telling her girls can't be on Jaguar. And you see her get angrier and angrier, and finally she has a confrontation with Don, which ends with him throwing money at her, literally. Wow. And by the end of the episode, she leaves the firm.
Oh, that is big.
And to all things, she goes to work for Ted Shaw.
Well, the thing is I hate Peggy, so that would actually make my day. But what I was going to say is, you have to remember, we're way behind on time.
It's a brilliant episode. The thing is, they handle everything beautifully. The scene where Peggy finally breaks this news to Don is like heartbreaking. I mean, Don, like, first he tries to sort of be snide to get her to change her mind, and then he just breaks down and you know, makes it very clear that how important she is. It's too little, too late, but you know, he does this. And when she offers her hand to shake, he kisses it like, you know, this long lingering kiss on her hand, which is actually kind of weird, but also very effective because he looks like he's just broken at that point. And it's a fantastic scene. It's like, you know, there's half of you is going, God, this is creepy, and half of you is going, oh. The next episode was basically Lane being found out, his embezzlement finally being uncovered, and being fired by Dawn. Although Dawn was telling him, well, you can resign. I'll give you the opportunity to resign. But for Lane, this is a death sentence, because everything that he was, everything that he is tied up in being a part of this firm, and he would just lose all his you know, reputation and credentials if he were to resign and just go back to England. So you're kind of marking time through the whole episode waiting for the inevitable, which is that he finally commits suicide. And it is tragic. It's incredibly heartbreaking when this finally happens. It was the scene where they find him is just horrifying and heartbreaking at the same time. And the partner's reaction to it, you know, is overwhelming. And Dawn realizes that this is now the second person he's been responsible for hanging himself. And it's a very, very affecting episode. There was also stuff going on with his daughter, which, you know, her getting her period for the first time, running back to her mother, which wasn't that big a deal. The main thrust of the episode was Lane, and all of that was just, as I mean, it was so inevitable, but at the end, and that, I think the inevitability of it was what just weighs on you through the whole episode, because you're just waiting for that second shoe to drop.
All right, yeah. we're gonna move on, unless you have very last. We need to move on.
No, it was a great episode. Both of them, the two of them together.
Oh yay! Okay, for all those Mad Men people, watch, you know, that show.
The next episode is the finale, right?
Yes, it is. I think they're putting themselves into a very, very strong position for a really kind of devastating finale.
All right. Next up, we have Longmire, which is the season premiere. And the reason that all of us watched it mainly is because Katie Sackhoff is one of the stars of the show. And as we watched it, we found out that there were other sci-fi people also in the show. But what was strange to me was the guy playing Longmire has never really done much of anything else. I looked him up on IMDb and he's like, nothing.
Oh, you know? Really?
Yeah, he's gotten hardly
just
any
came
credits.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, he's like been a background actor as far as like all his credits are like bartender.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Nothing really with a name.
Right,
you know,
nothing at all. So I was actually kind of impressed in that he had a quiet subtlety to him that I wouldn't have thought would have came. He must have done theater or something because he was pretty good. I really did like him.
I really do, and I like what they're doing with his character. I mean, because he's just kind of like this, you know, trying to deal with his wife's death, but at the same time, he really does have a hold on that town, and the whole, like, where now, like, his deputy is running for sheriff against him. And,
right.
I mean, sort of just the way that they're building it, I actually really enjoyed it.
Though they did make it obvious that his deputy is not that bright, you know. Like,
yes.
He gives the minimum amount of effort, and he's banking on the fact that he's pretty. To win the election, but if you want somebody to solve a crime, he is not your guy. And I like Katie Sackhoff. Basically, she's Starbuck. She's like
pretty much,
yeah. And she's great like this. Like every other performance I've seen her in and other shows have been kind of mediocre, but she excels when she's like, "Give me a gun, let me be Starbuck," and she's fine. and she's fine in this role. I like her. Lou Diamond Phillips. He's so, like, I don't know what, because they kept going back and forth whether he was a good or bad guy, though I did find it hilarious.
I think they came down pretty much on his being a
good
guy.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but I like that there was the whole racial thing. It was like, his friend was a racist. It's like, it's the Indian at the whatever bar.
Right.
And
so he could be the only one.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that was, I was like, ooh, you owe him a really big apology for that one. That, but the thing that intrigues me about the show as a whole is I want to know what happened to his wife. I want to know how he got all those scars. Like, that's the thing that's kind of getting me coming back. And it's mainly, strangely, not so much everything else is going on, but it's about him. Like, the Longmire guy. Like, he is the reason that I'm going to watch the next episode.
Really? Because I liked him. I thought his performance was very good in this, but I just didn't find the show interesting. I found the show, I mean, the second half, when I finally got around to watching it, was better than the first, but still, for me, there's really nothing to hang on to. I mean, I guess if you really like police procedurals, it's basically a police procedural with cowboy hats. but if you like that kind of thing, I guess you'll like the kind of thing. I hate that kind of thing. So for me, it was kind of torture to sit through this hour.
Police procedural so much.
I didn't either.
I'm really into that as well. I like the relationships, and I think sort of like what Livia was saying, I like, you know, sort of the revealing of his character. I mean, like, my favorite scene in the whole episode was towards the end where the one guy who actually did the crime, you know, was shot, and he walks away saying, "I didn't bring my cell phone, you know."
I don't have a cell phone, right.
I don't have a cell phone.
He's like, yeah, call. No. She's like, call the ambulance. He's like, yeah, I don't have a cell phone. And they established that through the whole episode that he doesn't have a cell phone. So right. I think that's, he has interesting traits, and it's like when his car crashes, all those beer bottles fall out or whatever, and he's like, yeah, not mine. He's like, if you ask anybody, I only drink this brand. What were those cans? They were not. And you see him picking up litter through the whole episode. So you know that he's telling the truth. So all of that, that's just like, there's little personality quirks about him that I just find fascinating. But anyway, done.
Oh, I was going to say, the book that he read was The Hounds of Baskerville. Which
yes!
I thought was, yay!
Yeah, nice Sherlock Holmes reference for all of us just finishing that. That was really good.
Timely.
But, yeah, it's very timely. But, you know, I think, for me, I'm going to watch it. So, I'm intrigued. I'm not going to say that I'm going to watch the whole season, but they've got me intrigued enough that I want to know more about this guy. And that actor, I'm really impressed that this is his first big gig. And he's just knocking it out of the park. So, anyway, moving on. Next up, talk about Eureka.
Of course, this was the episode where they finally decide to do the, say goodbye to Holly. And that turns out to be premature. So that was, they were leading up to it for a few episodes now. So it wasn't exactly surprising. But I was glad that they kind of committed to it and didn't just turn it into, yet another way of saying goodbye to her.
Right. It was pretty good. I like that, the stages of grief or denial or whatever that Fargo was going through, and how he was like up because he thought he saved her, and then no, she's dead, and no, she's back. And then, so they were going, like, he was being bounced around like a ball, you know? So I really felt bad for Fargo. And I liked that everybody got on board with him, except, of course, for Joe. But pretty much everybody got on board, like, okay.
Well, she did, too, by the end. She did.
Right. And they explained why.
Yeah.
Yeah, because she was really on board, but she had a different take on it. You know what I mean? It's just because of what happened with her dad.
Right.
Exactly. She thought that she was protecting him by doing what she was doing, you know, and she didn't realize that she was actually just making it worse.
Right.
Yes. And I thought it was good, like, the whole ghost in the machine, that they did it an interesting way where, you know, they had this other, they were going to, the antivirus shutting down, and she had to go through the different sectors, and how she was able to go into the laser beam and to try to say, help me. And so I thought it was interesting what they did with it, and how in the end she ended up, in Carter's house, with Sarah, you know what I mean? And so it's interesting what they decided to do with the whole thing of her essence being, sort of in the machine.
Yeah. Well, I just wonder if they're going to leave it like that or if they're going to try to restore her to some kind of real physicality.
I was like, come on, he's a scientist. Make a robot already.
It's not like they haven't done that before.
I know. I'm like, come on, you guys are brilliant scientists. Make her a robot and be done, you know? But, all right. Let's move on. It was thumbs up for Eureka.
Yes.
All right, next up, we haven't talked about Lost Girls in forever. But yes. Ronnie is now on the podcast, so I saved Lost Girls for when you're here.
See, yes. You know, and the thing about this series is I love it because it's light. You know what I mean? It is, you know, but at this, it's light, but at the same time, it's fascinating learning about the Fae world and these different creatures that inhabit it. And I like the way that they go into different types of creatures. Like, this particular week was about the Silky. I've heard of that, but it was interesting to see and how they play that out, you know, sort of in this world. And so it's one of those shows that I enjoy, but I don't have to sort of tear apart too much. Mainly I love Dyson. You
know? You're not being objective, are you? Or are you being swayed by the fact that that man is gorgeous naked? Which they show often on the show.
When they show him wet, you know?
Yeah. Oh, sorry, I got distracted. What I was going to say is we haven't talked about the show since season one. And one thing I wanted to say, talk about real quick is going into season two, what they made interesting is Dyson literally had his love for, why am I blanking on the main character's name?
Bo.
Thank you. Dyson literally had the love for Bo ripped out of his chest. So now he is incapable of... I don't know if he's incapable of loving her or he's incapable of love, period. It kind of feels like he's incapable of love, period, because all the love he had for Bo is just gone. So that broke them up because he couldn't feel anything when he was with her. And then he's with a new girl and he's kind of going through the motions with her. That's right, right?
Yeah, I would say that, yes.
Yeah, he's pretty much going through the motions, but you don't really feel like he really cares about her either. It's like he's kind of dead inside, which sucks, man. It's like, I was like, can you give him his love back, please?
Something, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It's just really hard to watch.
It is, but I think it's a really good twist for them to have. Because I know, like, I've heard some other people, like, they think, well, why isn't Dyson trying harder? But they don't understand that's part of what he gave up, is that he can't. You know, he can't bring that about. So it's going to be really interesting the way that they finally, because they have to get them back together at some point. And so it's going to be interesting to see the way it plays out. But I think, you know, they're playing it right on, that he just doesn't have that. So this, you know, sort of this woman from his past is really sort of just, you know, somebody to be with, because he can't get himself to be with Bo.
Right.
Okay.
So then you've got Trick, who you find out is the something king, the Blood King. So if he writes something in his blood, then he could actually change time and change history and change the course of history. But there's always a repercussion. And he used his ability to save Bo's life at the finale of season one. And so now you're finally starting to see what those repercussions are. And yes, that's all pretty good. And the new king of the Light Fae.
The Ash.
I didn't like him at first, but I'm starting to like him a little bit.
I still don't. I actually like to hate him, and so I don't want him anymore.
Well, I will give you a slight clue to the future. You will actually eventually like him.
Oh, man, don't do that to me. I'm
sorry to tell it to you, because I know what you're talking about. You hate him right now, because he seems kind of evil, but he's not as evil as you think he is. So,
nah. You know, and the other thing I forgot that did happen in this episode is the whole storyline with Lauren.
Oh, right.
Yes, because it's interesting, because as a character, I don't really like her character that much. I think she's the most interesting when she's in the lab, when she's dealing with, you know, sort of the different symptoms and things that are going on with the Fae. But now we find out that she does have a girlfriend who, you know, who has been in a coma. And that's the whole reason she got tied up with the Ash.
Right.
Is to try to find a way to cure her girlfriend.
Right.
And at the end of the episode, you know, Bo has been given by the Dark Fae an answer to how to save Nadia, the girlfriend, and it's a nail, and so you don't know how it's going to end up being used. And so that was kind of an interesting way to leave the episode.
Right, and that's all, and that also gives her the conundrum of she loves her too, Lauren, and if she saves Lauren's girlfriend, then she's going to lose Lauren. You know, so that's like, oh, what do you do? But, you know, Bo, she's going to do the right thing, mostly, for the most part. All right, let's move on.
Okay.
Thumbs up, Lost Girl, love the show. I cannot wait. Well, see, I've cheated. I've finished season two, so I just can't wait for season three. All right, so next up, let's talk about the season premiere of Rizzoli and Isles. And I say we, I mean me, because apparently I'm the only one who watched it. However, Rizzoli and Isles, my pitch for that is it's a buddy cop show, but with two women, and their bromance is awesome, except for... the season finale of last season left off with Rizzoli shot Isles' father. So, and it's not just she randomly accidentally shot him. She shot him on purpose because he's a criminal. And they were in, it was a really bad situation. But what happened now in this season premiere, is apparently Isles is kind of mad that she shot her father. So now it's like they had, the entire episode is their breakup. They are doing the ultimate girlfriend, boyfriend, been together for several years. Now we've broken up. This is mine. Where's your stuff? Give me back my tape. Like, they had the whole breakup thing.
Oh, jeez.
I was like, are you guys sure you're not dating? Like, it was weird. It was like they had the whole, did you give me my book back? And then Rizzoli's mom was actually living in Isles' guest house, and she made her mom move out because she was
really?
Like, she was like, blood thicker than water. You have to choose. And the mom was like, seriously? I'm not even in the middle of this. But she made her mom move out, and they took each other. Like, it was just, it was actually painful to watch because I like how close they are and how, you know, that they're really good friends. And watching them do this whole breakup thing was just, oh, it's awful. I don't, the case, whatever, does not matter. It was just their whole big breakup just was heart-wrenching. But yeah, it's, I love the show. I love the show. It's just the two of them make that show. There's other people in it, I guess, that are there, but who cares? So I thought that the premiere was great. They really just rubbed those emotions raw, and I felt like crying like twice during the episode. So I'm so glad. This is one of the shows over the summer that come back in the summer. I'm like so glad that it's summer, you know? Like usually I'm like, I can't wait for my fall shows, but there's a couple of shows that I can't wait that it's summer, and this is one of them.
Uh-huh.
All right, so you guys should give it a shot. Rizzoli and Isles! All right, next up, let's talk about Tron. Uprising. This was part one of two.
Yes.
What'd you think?
I enjoyed it. I thought first of all, it's gorgeous to look at. The animation is beautifully done. So if nothing else, it's fantastic eye candy. But I think that they've got an interesting story that, you know, they're pursuing.
Well, and for those who didn't recognize the voice of his new ally, that's Lance Reddick from Fringe.
Oh, okay. Well, I did not. Okay, very good.
Well, the only reason I recognized it is because he told me that he was in Tron, so there you go.
Because I was listening to the voice, and I'm thinking, I know that voice. I'm trying to place that voice, and I couldn't, so thank you.
There you go.
Because that was bothering me.
But I like him as the first recruit because the whole point of the uprising is he has to recruit an army to be an uprising. You need to, you know, rise up. So we finally find our first recruit and this guy's got a lot of military training. So I like that as a first recruit, even though, you know, it ends very dramatically like we want you to kill each other now, you know.
You just knew that was coming though. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they were too good. They won their battles, you know. The first battle, they stopped it before they can win. And then the second battle, they actually just won. And so then after that, they were like, okay, we're just going to have you guys kill each other.
Nothing else was left, you know. Yeah. But yeah, it was interesting. Especially, it was fun watching the second battle where, you know, sort of with the motorcycles and the way that they were able, you know, to cut the cord that was holding them together. But they then use that as weapons.
Right.
I enjoyed that whole sequence.
One thing I want to talk about before we leave Tron is actually Tron training him. What'd you guys think about that, the training session?
Well, if you want to get your trainee killed really early, that was fantastic. It was typical dramatic, you know, stuff to give you an idea of what he's supposed to be up against and how, you know, high the stakes are and all of that. But really, practically speaking, I mean, it really is kind of silly if you are starting with a guy who does not have this kind of training and you really want him to actually survive to do something.
Oh, you mean driving him off a cliff? I was like, yeah, driving him off a cliff.
Surprise!
What'd you say?
I guess if, you know, it's the real test, will Beck, you know, sort of rise above it? Because if he doesn't, he won't be able to handle other things, you know what I mean? And so he's got to pass this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. So, but I think it was thumbs up. It was a good, really good episode, part one. I cannot wait for part two, though. I have to say their promo department suck at tension because their preview for next week pretty much gives away all the tension of this week. So whatever.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, but I'm totally going to watch. Great show. I really like it.
Yes, same here.
All right, next up, I'm going to talk about the series premiere of Saving Hope, which is on NBC. And am I the only one who watched that? Yes? No?
Yes. All up to you.
I will say all the reviews were correct. This show is pretty much beyond mediocre.
Oh, geez.
I felt like I was swimming through molasses trying to watch the premiere. The first couple of minutes were actually pretty good with Michael Shanks basically does the whole, you know, randomly falls into a coma. Like, he literally got lightly blown on the head. He took a light blow to the head and fell into a coma. I was like, oh, what? Geez. I was like, are you kidding me?
Well, he's a fragile little snowflake, isn't he?
So he's in a coma and he's doing the whole out of body thing. And you know what? If the premise had, if they had kind of stayed with that premise and we've walked with him and followed him, it might have worked. But what they do is, once they establish that he's kind of wandering the halls, we actually switch back to the other doctors and watch what they're doing. So it becomes a hospital show that he randomly gets to say something about. Like, it's strange because he's doing all this voiceover, but like, you'll go 10 minutes with the other doctors and then they're like, oh yeah, Michael Shanks is in this. So then he'll do a little voiceover about whatever the doctors have just done, and then he'll just go away, and then they go back to the doctor thing, and I'm like, do you actually know what your show is about? Like,
apparently not.
And I have to say, the only good thing is they're doing this whole triangle thing where the doctor, because he was going to get married, like on the way to his wedding, he gets knocked into a coma. So the woman that he was about to marry is also a doctor, and her old boyfriend just got transferred to their hospital, so guess where that's going?
Oh, jeez.
Except that the only thing is the old boyfriend is one of my favorite actors from Vampire Diaries. He's Elijah. Oh. Elijah from Vampire Diaries. Just like, oh, I love you! But, so I kind of, like, want her to have the affair, but I was like, I'm not supposed to be cheering for that, right? But I don't know if I can watch another episode. Like, it's pretty mediocre. Like, somebody would have to tell me that this show gets way better. But it did well in Canada, right? It's like something. Or maybe... I was like, Canadians can't have that low a standard? Come on. I don't know. It's a strange, strange show in that it's not quite a Ghost Haunting the Hall show. And it's not quite like Hope. Cheesiness. Also, the name of the hospital is called Hope. The name of the show is called Saving Hope. And at the opening, he was like, "All we can do when you're in a coma is hope." I was like, "Oh my God, stop it!" But yeah, it's really blah. So if you don't have time to watch it and you're not already watching it, I'm not gonna tell you to start.
Okay.
So.
Good to know.
Yes. And then I'm going to pitch yet again, why are you not watching Rookie Blue? Rookie Blue is a cop procedural. It is. It's like Southland if Southland was populated by rookies. So, like, every rookie mistake that they don't... Like, Southland are freaking... They're all really professional, good cops. Okay. These guys, not the case. But this episode actually was, usually it's kind of funny. They play stuff for jokes, but this episode was actually really serious in that it was like one of the goofy cops actually shoots somebody and you get to see the shooting, but all the facts end up not adding up at the end. So you even doubt what you saw and he starts to doubt his own story. So it looks like he might not have had a good shoot and all this other stuff. So it's like his career might be over. So it's a pretty serious episode. In the midst of, normally they do really goofy and fun episodes. So, I mean, it was a good change of pace. I actually really enjoyed the episode. So I gave it a thumbs up. And it's summer. Watch it. It's on...
Now, is this the second season or how long has it been on?
This is the third season, I want to say.
Okay.
But the relationships, you can pick them up pretty quick. Like, all the rookies that started together are all of them are all friends. And everybody's paired up, but you can see who's paired up to who. And it's pretty easy to follow. You can totally just jump in. It's a fun show. I just really enjoy it. I mean, Southland, I'm not going to say it's fun. Southland is serious, but it's really good. This show is good because it's fun. Like, you know how, like you say Lost Girl is fun? This show is fun, too, but it does get... It probably gets serious a little more than Lost Girl does.
Okay.
But it's a fun show. I love the rookies. I'm always laughing at them, their hijinks and stuff. So, thumbs up. Rookie Blue.
All right.
Next up is Common Law. And I think I talked about it when it premiered for like 5 seconds. And now it's like on episode 4. So I'm checking back in with you guys. Though I will have to say, if the guys weren't as good looking as they are, I probably would have quit watching a while ago. But good Lord, those men are gorgeous. As you know, we have all the billboards around town, so we see them on the billboards all the time. But yeah, they're really good looking men. Anyway, the show is finally starting to feel like a real show. Like it started, like the rhythm, they're getting their feet. And so I'd say this is probably the first episode that I've enjoyed. Like really just enjoyed the whole episode. Normally I kind of just go kind of grit my teeth through some of it. Just like, oh, this is so bad. But this was a good one. This was like, it was called The Exes, and it was because they're doing the whole common law thing and that the two partners are basically married. They're treating them like they're a married couple. The Exes is, one of the cops' ex-partner. And so they have to solve a case with their ex-partner, and they have all the issues that you would have with your ex. It's like, it's really bizarre. But played out in a cop format in that the ex basically tries to screw them over so they don't get the bust and you have to rise above it and all that other stuff. But it was the criminal that they were going after was pretty obvious. Like I figured out who the criminal was in the first 5 minutes, but other cop procedurals are like that too. So it's not that big of a deal. But the main thing was they actually worked as partners in this episode because they wanted to show a united front against the ex. So that was actually, them working together works. So it's actually a weird thing. I'm like, you know, I know the premise is that they can't get along, but that's not working for me. So when they actually are working together and they're working as a team, I really like the show. So I'm like, I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But anyway, I like this week's episode. If you want to check out this week's. And I'm sure it's on Hulu or something. That's all I got to say about that show. nothing more. Next up, let's talk about Magic City. And this, we were supposed to talk about the finale, last week? But, you know.
Yeah.
So now we'll talk about it this week. And it was episode 8. And I'll let Allison talk first because I know you've been really waiting to talk about it.
Of course, when I was waiting to talk about it was when it was fresh in my mind. What was that about? Wait a second.
I watched it last night. I watched it last night, so I saw it more fresh than you. Basically, it was everything for the whole season kind of came together. Mm-hmm. The big mob boss guy got the pictures. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, I actually think that they're both too stupid to live. So I was like, cool, my boss, kill them. But I couldn't figure out.
I was surprised when it went another way, actually.
Right. I was too. But
even though they did kind of, they give you hints of that before, certainly.
Right.
That he likes to watch.
Right.
But yeah, that's taking it kind of far.
I don't know how long that's going to last because I can't see him liking to watch all the time.
Yeah,
so,
that was intensely creepy.
It really was.
It really was.
Though I didn't mind watching it from my perspective. Does that make me creepy? But
you're not married to either of the two parties, so
that's true.
Nor Bob Boss.
And then the episode all culminates in Ike being arrested, and they're trying to pin a murder on him that he actually did. So it's not, I guess, pinning it on him. But I like that he's cool about it because they're like, oh, I've convicted people on less. I was like, yes, probably people that don't have money. So
yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, I was like, he's got a good lawyer. He's got income. He's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if he talks, he's dead. So it's he's too cool. Like, you're not gonna break this guy. Mm-hmm. Like, this guy's like, oh, I can, like, what he did to break the prostitute was kind of really cold, but he can't do that to Ike.
No, not at all.
There's no way he could do that.
She can just disappear, but he can't.
Right. So there's no way he could do this to Ike. So he can't do all his crazy stuff. Ike's got too much money, and Ike is too cool for him to break him. So
yeah, I did think that what happened with the prostitute was interesting, though, because I found myself wondering, you know, the whole attempt on her life. I wondered if the attorney general actually worked that out, that he set that up, knowing that because he said earlier, I'm not really after you, I'm after Ben Diamond. And I'm thinking that they deliberately leaked information that there was going to be a gap in the turnover between, you know, the guys watching her.
Oh.
That's when they were going to go in and do it. And they knew perfectly well that, you know, he would make the attempt, and that's when they'd get it.
That's actually pretty good, because I couldn't figure out why that guy showed up. And then I don't know what he had her write on that letter.
Exactly. That's the thing. They asked her to write something to Ben Diamond. And I'm thinking that's how they're going to try to make it, because they killed the guy who went after her.
Right.
But not before making sure that he made the attempt. And so they've now got this proof that he sent an assassin after her. And meantime, they've also got something that she wrote, presumably to him, that's probably deeply incriminating.
Right. And it's Ben Diamond's number two man. So mm-hmm. It's not like he can deny he knows who that guy is.
Yeah. You
know, everybody knows he knows who that guy is.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
That's actually all pretty good. But I was, because I thought that was going to happen is he's going to kill the girl and then Ike would be out of prison because there's no witness. But mm-hmm. That's not what happened.
Yeah. No, I thought something was up when he came in and said, I'm not here to hurt you. I just want you to write this. And then I thought, wait a minute, something else is going on here.
But
I didn't give the attorney general that much credit to come up with something that complex.
And it's interesting that Diamond actually wants Ike in prison, you know, because he figures that with Ike in prison that he gets something. But I was like, nobody else knows he's supposed to get a cut. So I was like, how does that help you, dude?
Well, he could always put a puppet in charge. You know, he could put one of his own guys or something like that.
Yeah, but how is that going to work? Because the next person in line is the son. So I don't understand how he thinks that's going to work. But whatever. I don't get into the mind of the mob bosses. Because the whole point is that he has a top secret deal with Ike. Without Ike there, there's no deal. It's not written anywhere that he owns half of that hotel.
Right.
So, yeah, it's not in his best interest to let Ike go to prison.
I just think maybe he thinks that the son is more easy to control than Ike is.
Well, that's true. That's true. Yes, absolutely true. The son is not that bright. And no. Then, I actually, speaking of the sons, the Goody Two-Shoes sons irritated me. Like, I was just like, he's like, well, how do we know Dad didn't do it? Well, granted, he's right.
What?
His dad did totally kill the guy. But what tripped me out was his faith in the DA over his father irritated me.
I know. That was, well, he is consistent about doing this. And it just makes me wonder, it's like, don't you know who your family is? Kid.
Yeah. I know. I mean, well, he does, which is why he thinks his father totally killed the guy.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, how he could trust the DA is amazing.
Well, it's not that he trusts him. He thinks the DA is trying to do the right thing, which he is, but
only by screwing his father.
Right. And,
you know, how much does he want to do the right thing, you know, if it's going to deep six his family?
When we saw that he was willing to do, when he got his brother out of the whole blackmail thing, you see that he's willing to do bad things to save his brother. I'm mm-hmm. like, dude, you need to stand with your father, man.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I just think he's in deep denial I think he doesn't really know where he wants to stand on this.
Right. Because I'm like, if you think that your father's a criminal and you want to get yourself away from him, you need to move out of that hotel and make your way on your own. Like, mm-hmm. if he was willing to be like, look, I hate what you're doing. I'm doing this on my own. I disavow you, whatever. Then I would actually have respect for him.
Right. But he's not. No. He's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, well, it's not even in the middle. I don't know what's going on with him. Like, if you're living off of your father's money, you're going to school off of his dime, that you're assuming he's making by nefarious means, then how can you say that you're a good person? You know, if you're old enough to know at this point, and like, I'm not talking about if he's a kid, but I'm talking about he is in college and he's through law school.
Right. But that's why he irritates me, and why I just keep thinking how thick he is so much of the time, because he is doing all of this. And yet at the same time, he thinks that he can somehow, you know, work for the DA and become this heroic lawyer, you know, for the DA. And that's not going to happen. Well, it might happen, but only if you sever ties with your family.
Right.
So you got to choose, and he's not choosing.
One other thing is, I didn't understand why we did all this stuff with the woman in Cuba, and she died, and I was like, where is this going? Like, I didn't I understood that guy is the head of the cooks or somebody. Like, I don't even know what that dude's position is, let alone do I care about his wife being shot. Like, I why are we watching this?
First of all, it gives you an idea. It's their way of reminding you time and place, you know, what's going on at this juncture. You know, this is we're going into the whole thing of, you know, Cuba becoming communist and the break with the United States, you know, and starting the whole thing, the blockade. And all of that is, they just do little things. I mean, they did the whole bit with the Kennedys too, just, you know, to kind of remind you, this is what's happening. Well, they historically. Tying it into her, and to him, they made it personal.
I get
that's
that.
That's all I thought it was.
I thought, but if they were trying to make it personal, I should have felt something, and I didn't. I didn't feel anything for him or his wife or his daughter. So I was just like, the only way they would have made me feel something if it was actually Ike's wife. Like, if somebody in her family or somebody she knew or whatever got hurt, then I would have cared.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was too far removed to be anything other than, at least for me, just, oh, personal historical note.
Exactly. And so it should have been quick. But it was like, yeah, through the whole episode, I was like, someone shoot me already. That's one thing I didn't like about the finale. I did like that the wife stepped up in that meeting and made an interesting call. Like, mm-hmm. She basically took over that meeting and made a deal that they actually might take. Though, right, giving them free for 6 months, that's a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and I suddenly, they perked up at me from going absolutely no way. They suddenly looked interested.
Right. And I get that. I mean, she did a good job, and she, mm-hmm, threw herself in as a bonus and everything. And she wanted to dance too, so that all...
So it worked out for her.
It worked out for her, and he wasn't there to tell her no. He's not going to be happy about that, but he was in jail. What's she going to do?
Exactly.
But yeah, that was a good finale. It was a good finale. I do look forward to the next season, though it wasn't like Game of Thrones epic finale or anything, you know?
But I thought it was a good little cliffhanger thing, leaving you wondering where they're going to take all these threads.
Right. I do wonder, but it's not... Looking at the whole season as a whole, I love Ike. I love everything that goes on with him. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, you know, it's okay. And I do, the mob boss is a good boss. He's a good mob boss. I think that he's a good villain.
Because
at one point
he kind of excels at those kinds of roles too. I don't think I've ever seen him play a positive character. I don't think I've ever seen him play a good guy, ever.
Well, I kept thinking,
it's like, if you've got a jerk, hire him. He's perfect.
Well, I always think it's going to come down to Ike is going to have to get the balls to kill him. Like, I think that's the only way that's going to work out for him.
Mm-hmm. I don't expect that's going to happen for quite a while, though, because unless they come up with a new villain on the horizon, he's their big bad, and he fills that pretty well.
Yeah, and he's pretty scary.
He's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, he's pretty scary, and I love the fact when Ike was sitting in that room with him, he was terrified.
Oh, yeah.
So that was good. All right, wrapping up. Let us know what you want to see on the rewatch. Right now, the two contenders are Boston Legal and Being Human. We have a couple of votes from the podcasters about watching, doing a special podcast on Being Human UK this season, which means I actually have to finish watching it, which I haven't done. I think I've watched, actually, I haven't watched any of them.
I've watched the whole thing. So
that might be a thing.
And I don't want to give anything away, but this is probably going to be my last year of watching Being Human.
That's not giving anything away? Seriously? All right.
No, I didn't give any spoilers or specifics.
Yeah, but that was overall, like, it sucked. All right.
Done now.
My,
I have five to go, and so I've been very leery, but it's like I'm going to sit down and just watch them all through and see what, you know, what happened.
Right, and I think I owe it one more season to watch the whole thing through as well. All right, so if you have any feedback on what you guys think we should watch, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. And you can listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, Weedonopolis, and iTunes. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.